Be'ezus Hashem, we are now beginning our Parsha class on Parsha Shalach. Today is Chof Aleph Sivan, Tov Shinayin Ches, corresponding with the English calendar, June the 4th, 2018. Parsha Shalach is a Parsha that talks about the calamity of the Jewish people. There is so much that we can speak about. It's the parasha that I would use the word, it's about the infamous piece of history that the Jewish people had lived through in the desert. And it affects us till this very, very day. Just for a little bit of historical background, the Jewish people were approximately 11 days away from entering Eretz Yisrael. According to Mefarshim, Hashem could have made it in 3 days, speed things up. But because of the incident of the Meraglim, this is the story that we're going to discuss right now, the Jewish people were destined to be in the desert for 40 years, and from then on to go through the various Goliath diasporas that we live through today. It's so sad to recognize that we could have had it much better. But as Shlomo HaMelech says, Mishlei Moves V'chaim B'yad HaLoshon, death and life are in the hands of the tongue, V'oy HaVeho Yoichal Piryo, and one who loves to speak will enjoy its produce. That means positive or negative. One who enjoys to speak positively, he'll enjoy and reap the benefits of positive speech. And if the person doesn't speak well but speaks ill of others, then he will also eat its produce, the bitter produce that he can produce. Parsha Shalach is the bitter story of the Meraglim, and just give you a brief overview and then dwell on a little aspect, providing that time will allow us to speak. In short, the Meraglim, and we are going to start on page 798, the story of the Meraglim begins when the Jewish people requested of Moshe Rabbeinu to be like other nations and to go spy out the lands that they were intended to conquer. Like other nations, before you conquer a land, you have to send a group of spies to find out the area, to be able to see its strengths, its weaknesses, to be able to plan your strategy. You go into war, you go in with strategy. And they've appealed to Moshe many a time, although the Torah doesn't go into specific, and Moshe had consented. Moshe consented, although Hashem was unhappy with that move, but Hashem said, if you want to go, I'll give you permission, but I want you to know you are sending the Meraglim. The Jewish people really do not have to go ahead and send out spies. I promised them a land of good and plenty. I promised them a land flowing milk and honey. I promised them that we're going to conquer the land and they will be blessed with all good. But if you insist, then you can send your Meraglim. Yes.
Is there a dialogue here? Because the parsha starts with Hashem spoke to Moses saying.
Yes, right. I'm just giving you now.
Somewhere.
There's a dialogue. There is a dialogue. And as I'm going to just give you just this the basic picture of what happened in the parsha. Is that he sent
that's Be'al Peh, Torah Be'al Peh, that somebody said.
No.
Somewhere in here afterwards.
What are you referring to?
The chronology, like the parsha starting, Pasuk Aleph starts.
Yeah. I'm giving you right now an overview of the story, and then we're going to talk about some parts of the parsha, and we're going to deal with certain aspects. So again, Moshe sent the 12 Meraglim. Two of them were Tzadikim. That was Yeshua ben Nun and Kaleb ben Yefunah. The other 10 were not Tzadikim. They started off as Tzadikim, but we're going to talk more about their inner motives, and we'll discuss that a little bit later. In the meantime, they went to Eretz Canaan to spy out the land. It took them 40 days to crisscross the land. And they came back with the fruit of the land. 8 people carried grapes. One cluster of grapes. Could you imagine how gigantic it was? How heavy it was? Unbelievable. One of the Meraglim carried a fig. It was could have been a gigantic fig. And one carried a gigantic pomegranate. They came back when they saw... When they saw these giants, these roaming the land, and they were petrified, they came back and they had created a crisis. They had disillusionated the Jewish people into thinking that their plans of going to Eretz Yisrael is not viable. We cannot conquer. We cannot go. We cannot enter the land. Let us just live in the desert and be well. And this created a tremendous turmoil. It created a rebellion where the Jewish people started to rebel against Moshe Rabbeinu. Kaleb ben Yefunah and Yehoshua ben Nun tried their best to calm down the crowd, or I would say the rebellion, and they were unsuccessful. Moshe Rabbeinu was at that time was completely taken by surprise at this whole event took place so quickly. The Jewish people that night cried and complained against Moshe and against Hashem. Why did Hashem take us out of the land of Egypt to kill us here, or to kill us over there in the land of Canaan? Are there not enough graves to bury us? They wanted to allude to either in Egypt or enough graves in the desert. What was the whole point of taking us out to go kill us there in Canaan? And that night they cried and they complained. And Hashem listened. And Hashem was very, very disappointed. After all the miracles that Hashem has performed for the Jewish people, goes with the 10 Makkos and with the Anani HaKavod and with the splitting of the sea and with the Mun and with the Be'er Miriam, the water that they got from a rock. All of these miracles did not help them change their attitude towards Hashem and Eretz Canaan, and they were convinced that they were not capable of going to Eretz Yisrael. Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, "I'm prepared to destroy the Jewish people over here." Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Because of a few people, you want to go to destroy the Jewish people? Because of 10 people?" Hashem said, he took it back, and Hashem said, "Those who sin by lashon hara will be punished. The Jewish people who cry for nothing will be stuck in the desert for 40 years. It took 40 days. It took 40 days to crisscross the land of Eretz Canaan. Yom Hashana, a day for a year. Yom Hashana, a day for a year. And therefore they were stuck in the desert for 40 years. Those who have complained and cried from those who are 20 years of older will not go to Eretz Canaan. And they complained that our children are going to be killed, so they are going to end up in Eretz Canaan, and you people over 20 will not end up in Eretz Canaan, except Caleb ben Yefunneh and Yeshua ben Nun. We know from that night of crying for nothing is that infamous day of Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av was created on that night. Tisha B'Av was created on that night of crying.
Luminary Tisha B'Av. Every Tisha B'Av it will happen something back on.
Of crying for nothing.
Negative force.
Every Tisha B'Av. This is now the panorama view of what the Lashon Hara of the Meraglim
can create.
Have created and have done. Yeah. This is what the Lashon Hara has done.
But I have a problem.
We are here today because of the Lashon Hara spoken then. Now you have to understand something, that this is the first time the Jewish people as a people have spoken, have heard Lashon Hara, accept Lashon Hara, and that great people have spoken Lashon Hara, and we know everything from the first time makes a tremendous impression on society, on the people it affects, and on the world at large. This is the first time. Now, you have a few questions?
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
Okay, number one is, how is the Lashon Hara if they're telling a lie?
Well, they're not telling a lie.
They are. They're telling a lie.
Well, it doesn't matter if it's a lie.
But they're saying, I'll explain you what the Lashon Hara was.
Yeah, I agree.
The Lashon Hara...
That's my question, too.
Okay. The Lashon Hara was... that Hashem can't take us in the land. They spoke against Hashem and they spoke against the land. Hmm. The land is destroying its people. We can't be there. What did they see? They saw giants burying their relatives. Hashem made it happen so that the giants shouldn't be busy chasing after these little people that look like ants.
Yeah,
and these people, and therefore, instead of looking at it from the positive point of view, the land is killing its people. Hashem can't bring them out.
So
this is the way they spoke against the land, they spoke against Hashem. Yes.
So if I ask a stupid question, you're going to say nothing is stupid. So if somebody makes a mistake, but if their intent was not to deceive you, but they were foolish, stupid, call it what you will, they didn't realize.
They were naive.
Call it whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
Why punish that stupid person?
The answer is, and what we're going to get involved today, we have a bunch of questions we have to address. Let's now start.
The intent, I think, is important.
We have really 6 minutes left. Because they're going to soon start with their shir, with their chavrusas. Okay. I want to try to get... I gave you a very important background. I told you what the Lashon Hara has done, why we are here today in Golus as a result of that. Mm. So the effect of their calamitous report was so effective. We have to walk away with realizing how negative, how powerful, and how destructive Lashon Hara is among ourselves. So now let's start a few psukim. Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, I'm beginning on page 798, Pasuk Aleph and Beis. Come on, we're going to move on. And we're going to be skipping around. Shalach lecha anashim, send for yourself, people. Now, Hashem is telling Moshe, for yourself, I was not the initiator. Send for yourself, but Yasu as Eretz Canaan, let them spy out the land of Canaan, Ashani Nosim of Ne Yisrael, which I'm giving to the Jewish people. Ish echod lamate voisav tishlachu. Each a man of from each shevet to the of his household of his father's house shall be sent tishlachu kol nasi vehem. All right, every nasi, every should be sent from the shvatim to go ahead and spy out the land. Okay. Now, let's skip now. What did exactly he tell them to do? Let's go to Pasuk Zayin. Pasuk Tezayin. Eilu Shemais HaNashim HaShasholah. After he listed all the names of the people who are supposed to go and spy out the land. Eilu Shemais HaNashim HaShasholah Moshe Vatsu'es Oret Vayikr Moshe. The Hoshea ben Nun Yehoshua. And Moshe called Hoshea ben Nun Yehoshua. He put the Yud in front of his name, and Rashi explains what is that referring to. Rashi tells us that Moshe was mispal for Yehoshua. Ko Yehoshiecha mi atzas miraglan. Hashem should save you from the plan, from the plot of the Meraglim. So there are a number of questions right away. Why did Moshe want to pray only for Yehoshua and not pray for the rest of the Meraglim? If he knew that the Meraglim were planning a plot, there was something there. What was happening? He knew something was going on. Yet somehow Moshe couldn't change the reality, and we're going to talk about that in a moment. Kalev ben Yefune went together with Yehoshua and the whole group. Okay? And let's move on. And what happened, let's go, we'll turn a page to page 800. Pasuk of Gimel, Vayavo at Nachal Eshkol, and they came to a place called Nachal Eshkol, and the Meraglim cut Vayichusu Misham Zemora, a branch, means a branch of a vine, Vayeshkol Anovim Echad, and one cluster of grapes, Vayisauhu Vamot Bishnoyim, and they carried it with two poles, and each pole had four people holding on. Min harimonim and min ha'teinim. Lamaka mahu korah nachal eshkol, to this place they call it nachal eshkol, al odot to eshkol asher korsu misham b'nei Israel. On that fact that the Jewish people cut the branch over there from that place. Vayoshuvu mito ha'aretz, and they returned from spying the land. Miketz arboim yoim, at the end of 40 days. Vayelchu vayavo'u el Moshe ve'el Aharon. They went and they came to Moshe and Aaron. Ve'el kol adas b'nei Yisrael, and to all of the Jewish people. El midbar Paran Kedesha, to this place called Midbar Paran. Vayoshivu osam dovar, they reported the thing. Ve'el kol ha'eda vayaram es pi ha'aretz, and he showed them the fruit. Look at this fruit, you've never seen anything like it. We need eight people to carry one cluster. One person a fig, one person a pomegranate. Impossible to imagine. But here it is, the evidence. They told over and they said, we have come to the land that you have sent us. Vagam Zavas Chalavadvash, turn the page to 802. And now, and it's flowing milk and honey. Zavas Chalavadvash, who? He, Vizep Pirion, these are the evidence, this is the fruit, look what kind of a land it is. Efes, but, Ki Azaam, the nation is strong, Ayoshe Ba'oretz, Ve'orim Betsuah is Kedolah is Mahom, and the cities are fortified, big, tall cities, very fortified. And we saw the children of the giants, at that place. And on top of that, that terrible nation, Amalek. Amalek is Yosef Be'eretz HaNegev, he's in on the south. Vachite, and then he goes to the list of the other names. And now everybody is in a turmoil. There is a tremendous fear, and there's a tremendous, the tremendous trepidation. Should we continue to go? And they were screaming, why did you want us to go to such a land and get destroyed by these people? Vayahas Kalev, I'm going to Pasuk Lamed. And Kalev quieted down the people. Vayahas Kalev Esa'am El Moshe. Vayayimim says, Alo Na'aleh, we will surely be able to go up. Vayarashna Oysa, and we will be able to inherit it. Ki Yachol Nuchal, we certainly can go up to it. Vayanashim Asha'alui May Amu. But the 10 against him, or 2, I should say, was Yeshua. They outnumbered them and they screamed and says, no, we can't. We can't. They are too strong. They're much stronger than us. They spoke Lashon Hara on the land which they have spied on it. El Bnei Yisrael Lamar, to say to the Jewish people, what's the Lashon Hara? Ha'oret asha avarnu v'al asura oisa eretz oichelos yashveha. It's a land that we, after we spied it, is a land that eats up its inhabitants. V'chol ha'om asher inu b'sarcha anshei midot, the people of tremendous, tremendous heights. And even we've seen giants, v'sham inu as in the nephilim, b'nei anok min ha'nephilim. And v'nehi v'eineinu kacha govim, we were looked in our eyes like grasshoppers, v'chein ha'inu v'eineihem. And that is how we were looked in their eyes. Then the pasuk that really is the clincher of this whole story is Vatisa Kol Ha'eda, the whole nation raised up their voices, Vayitnu Es Kolam, and they raised up their kolam, their voice, Vayivku Ha'om Balailahu. And that night they cried, and that night the nation, and they Vayilonim Al Moshe Val Aaron, they complained on Moshe and Aaron called Bnei Yisrael. Vayomer Aleihem Kol Eda, Lu Masnu Be'eretz Mitzrayim, Halavai, we wish we would have died in Egypt, or by Midbar Hazeh, or in this desert, Lu Masnu. And so on, and says, why did you take us over here and so forth, just to go kill our children? What is the reason behind this? This is Lashon Hara, they said, and this is where we're up to. We have a few things we have to understand. Why was Moshe Rabbeinu, who had an inkling what was going on, why did Moshe Rabbeinu not pray for the Meraglim that they shouldn't fall into such a trap?
Right.
Okay. Why did he not pray for Kalev ben Yefune? He only prayed for Yehoshua ben Nun.
Right.
What's going on over here?
That was a big question.
And another question is how come Kalev ben Yefune, when he reached Eretz Canaan, threw himself on the graves of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov to pray that he shouldn't fall into the trap of the Meraglim? And Yehoshua ben Nun didn't do that. Well, I'm going to try to answer these questions. My Rosh Hashiva in the Sefer Chideko touches upon these beautiful ideas. And I will preface with a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. And the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, in Perek Beis, Mishnah, Hey, Hillel Omer, Val Tifresh Min HaTzibur, but it's the second comment I want to dwell on. Don't trust yourself till the day you die. What does that mean? Don't trust yourself. Always have a certain trepidation. I might make a mistake. I might slip. I might sin.
So have a bad, bad guy.
I want to be careful in how I live and how I conduct my affairs. So I'm always a little bit above the above water, and that I can care for myself and be careful to get myself out of a problem before I get started. No, in other words, is there a chokhmah v'oras hanoda? Who's smart? A person who sees the future. What does it have to do with us?
That answers such questions.
Yeah.
Answers,
how does that answer my question?
And you said, well, they were so naive.
Yeah. So now I'm going to tell you what happened over here. We bring out over here that from Mefarshim explain that Moshe had a very serious problem davening for the Meraglim, because the Meraglim had ulterior motives in such a deep way that they themselves couldn't really touch base with it. What was their ulterior motives? They knew these Nasiim, when they would arrive in Eretz Yisrael, they would no longer be Nasiim anymore. They will no longer be princes. And as a result, the only way they can maintain their status is if they stayed in the desert and enjoyed the royal treatment that they were given.
Okay, so that's my point. So the 40 years is not a punishment to them. That's what they wanted.
Listen, let me finish.
How is it a punishment? That's what I want to know.
They got what they wanted.
Yes.
No. You're listening.
That's the thing, yeah. God gives you what you want.
Excuse me. I
want to see the negativity to their eyes.
No. But they did something terrible. But if they were able to do it without Lashon Hara and without getting the Jewish people into trouble, that would have been fine. But it was a wrong decision. If they were not supposed to stay as a... Let me just finish.
I'm not saying that.
If they were not supposed to be Nasiim as they arrived in Eretz Canaan, that was the end of their role, right? A king has an end to his role, and then whenever he passes away, that was the end of their role of Nasiim. What did they try to do? They tried to get make a mob scene. That's what it was, out of the whole situation. And why did they get the Adas Bnei Yisrael involved? They should have just conducted a private conversation between them and Moshe and Aaron. Since when did they have the right to go ahead and make such a public demonstration and create a rebellion?
They did the same with Korah.
Let's keep focused on over here. So Moshe Rabbeinu could not pray for them, because that was a midah in their system that they had to work out themselves. If you have a certain midah, a certain motive, that you have an inclination that drives you a certain way, then you got to deal with your inclination. You have to, for example, okay, let me be more practical. If a person has a problem with a dieting issue.
A what?
A diet. He has to control. So he has to find the wherewithal in himself to control. Huh? You can advise, but that's not the point. The point is, the person who has an issue with the dieting, to control himself, he sees X amount of danishes and donuts and cakes and whatever is fattening in front of him, right? He has to deal with himself. That's him. I can pray for him all I want, but it's not him. He has to control himself.
But you can help them.
That's true, but here he couldn't help them, because he knew that there was an intrinsic aspect of their personality that they had to learn to cope with. And if they wouldn't cope with that personality, he was out of range. That's why he couldn't even pray. Why did he not pray for Caleb ben Yefunneh? Because Caleb ben Yefunneh was one of the Nasiim. Yeshua ben Nun was not one of the Nasiim. So he could, He became one of the leaders for the village group. So he could pray. He was able to pray for Yeshua not to be affected. But the others weren't able to be prayed for, because Moshe said, "This is something that's out of my hands. That they have to deal with their own issues." What do we see from over here? When a person has inclinations, he has issues that he has to control himself. Then each one has to daven for himself. What did Caleb ben Yefunneh do? He put himself on the grave of the Aves HaKadoshim, and he prayed for his weakness, being a Nasi. He knew being a Nasi was an issue, because he was a Nasi, and he's going to lose his position. What did he do to not get sucked into the Meraglim? He threw himself on the graves of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and prayed. And that's what we want. So we learn something over here. I'm going over time. We learn a very important thing. We daven every day for ourselves, so that we should be able to have control over our inclination.
Okay.
Do you know where? Right at the beginning of davening. Right at the beginning. I'll read it to you.
Yeah.
Look what you say after the brachas.
Sure.
Right after the brachas. You say over here, after Hanosan lo yavkayach, you say, Amav Hashem me'enoy me'esumam me'afapoy, you say, Yehi ratzal mufanecha Hashem olekeinu velekei avaseinu. Let it be the will of Hashem, our God, the God of our fathers. Shetargileinu b'sei v'secha. Make us become accustomed to the study of Torah. V'dapkeinu v'mitzvei secha. And that we shall cling to the mitzvahs. V'al tivyeinu v'lidei chait. And we shouldn't be attracted and drawn to do sin. V'lolidei aveira v'avon. And not to doing aveiras and all sorts of wrong. V'lolidei nisayim. We shouldn't be tested. V'lolidei v'zayim. And not to put ourselves into shame. We shouldn't be attracted to the Yetzer Hara. We're davening for that. That's what the Meragim could have done too. They could have done too. And distance us from bad people, or mechaveron, from bad neighbors and bad associates. We should be calm. We should stick to the Yetzer Tov. And we should force our Yetzer Hara to serve us. What do we see from over here? This is what the Meragim was supposed to do. And this is what we have to do every day. And we walk away with a message. If we have the wherewithal, we have the foresight to know that it's in our hands, it's in our ability to control our destiny. By davening for Siyata Dishmaya, we could be no different than Kol Ben Yefuna, and we'll be an asset to ourselves, our families, and to our communities. Have a wonderful day.